Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly. How are you?
Kelly, I'm in love with this new cat breed. It's called a Caracal. I sent you a picture of it. We went to the
Gorgeous.
Animal Safari Park, and I know some people have mixed feelings about that, but this place really does do a lot of amazing things for animals, and they go extra specially out of their way when they've rescued an animal to try to, if they can, put it back out into the wild.
Oh, that's great.
So they had two different kinds of tigers, 6 months old, that they had rescued that are available to be together right now. But by the time they hit about 3 years old, they'll fight and they'll have to separate them. Also, one was going to be about double the size of the other because they're two different breeds.
Oh, my God.
But watching these two critters play, it was so beautiful. And this Caracal, I swear I'm in love.
So cute.
Just in love.
Well, I was saying, because when you showed me the picture, I'm like, I don't know how you look at that and not want to, like, kiss it on the mouth.
Well, I want to, but I know that that little bugger would destroy your mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
If you did that. Because somebody did try to kind of get a little bit closer. Uh-huh. And this little kitty is 16 years old now, 35 pounds, one of the best hunters of all cats. They can jump 8 feet straight in the air, and they have these little floppy things on the ends of their ears that are bird attractors.
Oh my God.
So funny. This guy was very, very adorable.
So
but
sweet.
Fierce.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so that's what we did. We went down to the San Diego area and saw some friends and had a nice time. The weather was beautiful.
It's so nice.
Yeah. How about you?
So on Saturday, so our last week's guest was Maddox. He is the author of Fuck Whales, also Families, Poetry, Folksy Wisdom, and You. And he invited me to come on his show. I swear to God, I probably peed myself twice. Like, it was so funny. He and his co-host were hysterical. And it was like, it was just that like soul-feeding like humor that I so needed for 2 hours. And it was just an amazing experience.
I can't wait to hear it. And I can't wait to be on. I'm going to do it in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Wow.
Awesome.
That's so fun. Yeah. I took his book to my friend's house this weekend and read a couple of the chapters out loud. It is so funny.
It is so funny. Yeah. He really is just so talented. We were talking about on the show how to be really funny, you have to be really smart. And so clearly, I mean, this guy's very bright and it's so fun to watch in action too.
So quick-witted and such a different demeanor, like in the present.
Oh my God, in person, right? Because
cool guy.
Is great.
Yeah. Oh, see, what else? Oh, Westlake Village, not too far from where I live. An actual mountain lion was in this family's backyard trying to get into the glass door.
That's insane.
Do you know that I have an obsession with mountain lions?
You do?
Like an actual obsession. They show up in my dreams.
No way.
I think about them. So I'm really afraid because I know one day I am going to manifest a mountain lion.
Well, I wonder if that's like your spirit animal.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be. But I mean, they're everywhere.
Wow.
So
I have a fascination with coyotes.
You do?
Yes. It's funny because mountain lions are like the cats for you and coyotes are the dogs for me. It makes perfect sense.
Exactly.
But coyotes are always coming up on our hill because we're back against the hill.
Right.
So one day we hear this howling and I look outside and David took like a flashlight and we see like a set of 8 eyes.
Oh.
It was so terrifying but cool at the same time. Yeah.
You have to be careful with moose. You never leave moose outside alone.
Please.
Right?
That dog is a prince. He would never be like in an outhouse. Like if anything, I'd sleep in the outhouse and he'd sleep.
But he doesn't even like to just go outside and like lie in the
sun.
Yeah, but always monitored, supervised.
Yeah, I mean, and during the day, it's fine. Yeah. It's not a problem. Yeah.
Although when those guys get really hungry
and they
don't have enough water, you really have to be careful in dry seasons because they have to come down for water.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. So I actually wouldn't leave him unsupervised.
Right, unsupervised.
Till we get some more rain.
Right. That's true.
Yeah.
Wow.
Otherwise, they like to stay in their natural habitat. They don't really want to encounter us.
That makes sense.
Chris and I were walking in a park not too long ago, just, you know, where they play soccer and all this stuff, and this thing starts running straight toward us. And I'm like, I don't think that's a dog, but it was alone. Because usually
it was a coyote.
It was like, that's a coyote. He was displaced. And so he was running through that park faster than anything just to get up to
the
hill behind us. I know. He looked like one of those race dogs, like a greyhound.
That's what the thing. It's like they look so real. Like you, like knowing me, I'd come up and be like, "Oh, how cute!"
Poppy,
you know?
Yeah.
Yes. It's scary. Wow.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Yeah, so you did already mention our guest from last week. Hysterical. That show was very funny. So if you missed that, please go take a listen. That was Maddox, the author of, well, F**UCK Wales, also families, poetry, folksy wisdom, and you. And we know what that asterisk stands for.
I liked how when you said it, you like said it with such like pizzazz when you said the title, like when he was here. It was very funny.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Well, today, since I don't have my reading glasses on, I'm going to let you do the reading here.
Today, I'm super excited. We have Corinne Zupko. She is the author of From Anxiety to Love. As a licensed counselor and keynote speaker, she's helped thousands of individuals through her one-on-one counseling, weekly meditation classes for corporations, and the largest virtual conference of ACIM in the world through the organization Miracle Share International, which she co-founded. She lives in New Jersey. Visit her online at www.fromanxietytolove.com.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. You'll notice I probably won't have that Jersey accent that you might be looking for.
I know. I don't hear it at all. Where were you actually from?
That's because nobody here actually talks that way.
That is so... Well, see, my parents are from Jersey, but they're closer to New York, and they... I feel like they definitely have an accent, like my friends have told me. But are you, like, Central Jersey?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a Staten Island influence, so I think you're right. The further up north you are, the more you might actually hear it.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Oh, so you were born and raised there?
Yes. I've been... Although I did live in Florida for a number...
Oops, we lost you for a second. What did you say?
I said I was, although I was definitely born and raised here, I lived in Florida for a time, but I do consider myself a Jersey girl now.
Jersey girl, how cute. Oh, so I love the book. So excited to talk about it. But I have a few questions for you. What is the ACIM stand for?
ACIM is A Course in Miracles. It's a spiritual, like a psycho-spiritual text book that has been truly helpful for me. It's what I have studied and what my book is actually based upon, because a lot of the principles have really been helpful to me in overcoming fear.
Oh, I've heard about that. That's awesome.
Tell us a little bit about the Course in Miracles before we launch into your book.
Yeah, so A Course in Miracles is a book that you can buy at any bookstore, and it is comprised of three parts. It has a textbook, a workbook, which contains a lesson or a meditation for every day of the year. And then the third part of the book is a manual for teachers, which is really, we're all teachers and learners. So the manual for teachers is actually a great way to start reading the book, because the text is really dense and rather theoretical. So it's a pathway, a spiritual pathway that helps us remember the love that we're all made of, instead of that sort of incessant, fearful voice that we're all accustomed to listening to.
So I can absolutely relate, because I've dealt with anxiety too, and I was wondering if you can tell us a little bit about sort of your journey with anxiety.
Absolutely. So my journey with anxiety has been lifelong. I like to joke around that I was born anxious because I was diagnosed with my first anxiety disorder at the age of 2.
Oh, wow.
And went on in later years to have additional diagnoses of panic disorder and generalized anxiety disorder. And my anxiety really took the shape of always being very focused on health fears, afraid of getting sick, afraid something was wrong with me. And when I went to college, I was a sophomore in college at the time, a student who I didn't even know passed away very suddenly, and it just freaked me out. He was apparently fine the night before at a party and then found dead the next morning. And I remember feeling really freaked out by that, but I calmed myself down. 3 a.m. that next morning, I woke up in the middle of my very first panic attack, and I was so scared. I had no idea what was happening. I thought I was dying. My heart was racing. It was hard to breathe. My hands were shaky. And I was just totally overwhelmed in anxiety. And magically, my mom, I actually dialed my mom's number 3 o'clock in the morning. And for some reason, she heard the phone, even though she sleeps in earplugs and like a white noisemaker. It was kind of a miracle that she heard it. And she sort of talked me through my very first panic attack and instilled hope that we would find help with me. So my anxiety issues have really been lifelong. Although now, because of everything that I have written about in the book, my anxiety issues are now light years from me. I don't struggle the way that I used to, and that's kind of why I had to write the book.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing so candidly with us. Yeah, I think I don't know too many people, especially in this very stressful world we live in, that don't suffer from some form of anxiety, certainly at times. So this book is so helpful for people to have some tools. So clearly your own story inspired you to write the book. What was the biggest lesson you've learned through your journey with anxiety?
You know, there have been a number of lessons that I've learned through anxiety. The first one that comes to mind is that I learned that I could let anything be my teacher. So rather than looking at this as something horrible and why is this happening to me and, you know, like really feeling a lot of strain, I instead looked at it as an opportunity to learn and to grow and to use this as a teacher to really try to find the root of what was going on in order to find healing. So in that, one of the other lessons that I learned is that, and this might sound kind of out there, but that my small sense of self, you know, this idea that I'm a separate self disconnected from everything, from everyone, it also taught me that that's really not who I am, that what we all are is love, and we're all connected in this very loving way that's very, very real, and that it really taught me that I can trust that. So that was a huge miracle to learn from something so painful.
Sure.
Did you like have other techniques that you used for anxiety that didn't quite work with you, like CBT? Or I'm curious how you kind of ended up in the course in miracles realm, or did that just drive with you?
Yeah, I tried everything. You know, I've been to numbers of different therapists and psychiatrists, and really was searching for different ways of really getting to the root cause. So yes, cognitive behavioral therapy, NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, that's a little bit of a different modality. And although these things were definitely helpful, you know, disputing those irrational thoughts are helpful to a degree, it still didn't really get to like the depths of my fear, which was like really ultimately a fear of dying, a fear of suffering, a fear that, you know, everything that I know and love is going to one day change and pass. And so it was a very existential anxiety. And so those techniques, those theories, which are so helpful and have been shown to be so helpful for depression and anxiety, they only were partially helpful for me. That's why I ultimately turned to A Course in Miracles, because I needed something that was really going to help me dive deep into my own mind.
I'm really curious. So if I see a from and then a to, right? You go from this to that, right? The title is From Anxiety to Love. I probably would have said, thought it would go from anxiety to peace or to calm, right? So can you help me make the link, help our listeners make the link that how did we get to love?
Great question. So how do we get to love? One of the first ways that we can begin this process is learning how to distinguish between the voice of fear in our mind and the voice of love in our mind. So we have both of these voices, and they're not necessarily voices, more like feelings. So we're very accustomed to the feelings of fear and that sort of judgmental voice in our own minds that tells us that we're not good enough, that we'll be happy only when we, you know, get something else outside of ourselves. It tells us those things like that. So we know that voice really well. There's also this voice of love in our minds that is always there, but it's easily drowned out by the voice of fear. It's easily looked past because we're so distracted by all of, you know, the distractions, the fearful voices, the judgment thoughts that occupy our mind as well. So the voice of love, we have to first acknowledge that, you know, this is part of our mind, that there's part of our very own mind that remembers this love. And when I say the word love, I'm talking love with a capital L, a love of the universe, a divine love, a love that encompasses all things. So I'm really talking about a very big, big love here. And so the process of learning how to shift from fear to love is really about getting comfortable working with a part of our very own mind that in my book, I call your inner therapist, which we can think of as the voice of love or our inner guidance system or our intuition. And as we turn to this part of our mind more and more, the more we are able to place our trust that there's something actually really there. And it's, again, it's not outside of ourselves. It's part of our mind that remembers peace and remembers love. As we turn to that, we ask for what in the Course in Miracles is called a miracle, which is a shift in perception. And so we're sort of exchanging our fearful perceptions for loving perceptions. So we exchange the fear and we get back the love. So we're not losing anything, but it's that sort of shift that happens. And as we work these principles and begin to connect with that peace and joy and love that comes from within, we really start to loosen our grip on the fear that we have come to trust in, you know, that fear that we've come to really, really know, and our trust builds that there is, in fact, something beyond our bodies, beyond, you know, just the world of form that we see. So I know that might start getting a little bit out there, but that's what's been super helpful for me, is really developing that strong sense of spirituality.
I can completely relate, because I think for me, it's so funny with my anxiety, it's the same sort of thing. I think spiritually, that's what helped me the most, was sort of having that trust and surrender and all of that. But I'd love for you to speak for a moment about the people who may be slightly turned off because they think of religion, or they think of, I don't know, I've heard all sorts of kind of stuff about God or religion. And do you have any thoughts around that, about how to you know, help people with that?
Absolutely. I think that's a huge trip up that we all experience, and I know I did absolutely in the beginning of my own journey. I think it's important, number one, that we know that, first of all, specifically A Course in Miracles is not a religion. It's just a self-study pathway that oftentimes is beneficial to study in groups because, like I said before, it's kind of hard to understand. But it's important to remember that we are often talking about the same type of thing, but we get caught up in semantics. So if one person really does not resonate with the word God, what's a word that does resonate? You know, universe, love, oneness. And with your inner therapist, like in A Course in Miracles, that's referred to as Holy Spirit. And that might be a turnoff for some people. So that's why I like the word inner therapist or inner guidance system. So I think the first thing that we have to really keep in mind is that a lot of this is semantics, and if it's words that we don't resonate with, there's other words that we can substitute instead, and we can still get the message underneath the word rather than getting tripped up by the words themselves.
Cool. I was thinking also, there are some people who subscribe to the view that there are only two emotions, fear and love. Is that where you come from as well, or do you add in others?
That would be where I come from as well, because that's what I've learned through A Course in Miracles, that it's love or fear, and most every emotion we can sort of, you know, put in one of those two categories. There's a lot of fear-based emotions with jealousy and judgment and anxiety and worry, you know, that all falls into fear. The love, the compassion, the gentleness, the, you know, the innocence, that falls into the love category. So I do like thinking of them as two of our basic emotions.
And what about sadness?
Sadness, so that's obviously a very healthy human emotion. And it's not, when I say that we can sort of divide the emotions into two, it's not, I'm definitely not implying that any of them are bad, because we have to be in touch with our sadness when it comes up. Denying our feelings is not a healthy spiritual practice, but sadness, would go into the fear side because, in some way, because, you know, if there's sadness, it's because we're experiencing some kind of loss or some kind of disappointment, and not experiencing that eternal sort of constant state of pure love. So although it would go onto that side, it doesn't mean that we don't feel these things or we don't work with these things. It's very, very important that we're honest about our feelings and that we feel our feelings and not try to stuff them.
Although I could see it being sort of a form of compassion also, right? And that would be under love, that, you know, when your sadness is generated by, you know, some empathy,
like feeling
for
emotions,
somebody,
yeah.
Feeling emotions.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I love that, that seeing that compassionate stance toward your own sadness is loving. Definitely.
It's very different than being in a state of guilt or a state of depression. Like, depression isn't really an emotion. That's a like a clinical state of mind. So yeah, that would certainly be from the anxiety component and not the same as sadness.
Yes, yes, I agree.
So we are speaking with Corinne Zupko. She's the author of From Anxiety to Love, A Radical New Approach for Letting Go of Fear and Finding Lasting Peace. So in one of the sections of your book, it's called Down the Ego Rabbit Hole, which I love. So how do you personally define ego?
So I personally define ego as that voice of fear in our mind, which we've already been talking about really in our conversation so far when we've been talking about fear. The ego is our belief that we are separate selves, separate from one another, separate from love. That's the ego. It's that voice in our minds that tells us that we're not good enough, that we're not worthy enough. All those messages that, you know, many of us hear in our minds. So the ego, in a nutshell, is that voice of fear.
And so I think a lot of people get tripped up with sometimes the ego voice feels louder than sort of, you know, what you call the inner therapist voice or that gentle voice. And so what are your tactics for trying to let the inner therapist kind of come out rather than the ego?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So it definitely can seem, because I'm sure we've all had that experience of trying to sit down and practice a meditation, and then your mind is just going, you know, a mile a minute, and we have that monkey mind where we jump from one thing to another. So it definitely feels like that ego voice is louder. The tactics, some of the strategies that I teach in the book about letting the inner therapist lead the way, really is about acknowledging what our feelings are, fully looking and being honest about what's coming up in us, you know, that ego stuff that might be arising, and really coming into a place of being willing to see it differently, because willingness creates an openness in our mind for a different perception. So that willingness is, rather than being fixed in the way that we see things, that willingness is sort of opening us up to another way. So in a sense, we're creating an open spot in our mind, in our heart, to let that voice of love, to let that inner therapist voice come in instead.
I love that. So seeing it differently.
Beautiful. Can you just let us know the simple three-step recipe for healing? Can you let us?
Yeah, so the simple three-step recipe for healing, which might sound so simple, and I can speak to, like, you know, well, I did that three steps and nothing happened. I can talk to that in a moment. The three-step recipe is finding your willingness to see whatever your issue is differently. So whether that issue is a feeling like anxiety or a relationship problem or some kind of other problem, find your willingness to see that problem differently. Give your willingness to your inner therapist and ask for the miracle instead. So you're asking your healing part of your own mind for a new perception, and then resting in trust that it's been done, that the moment that you asked, that answer was given, and trusting that and just sort of resting in that trust. Now, I hinted at, you know, okay, I did the three steps and nothing happened. What do I do? And that's, you know, something that I went through and that I've heard from many people. It's important that we remember that this work is like peeling away an onion, like layers of an onion. And if we imagine that love is at the center, we're peeling away one layer at a time. Mm-hmm. And so just by having this willingness to see differently, we can imagine that, you know, one of those onion layers is falling away, but we might not immediately recognize that shift or that miracle because we're either not ready to, or there's other stuff that's still there. So patience is so important in this process, and mm-hmm. patience with ourselves, because this isn't necessarily like a snap your fingers magic approach. I believe that some folks can have big insights and big shifts all at once, but this was much more of a gradual healing process for me.
Can we do a real life example of some sort?
Oh my goodness, absolutely. So
I have one for you. So
okay,
she's like, help me.
No, this isn't actually personal, but you know, it's a common thing. People come into therapy and they're in an abandonment crisis, right? They're mm-hmm. fearful that their loved one is going to leave them. They're out of sorts. Maybe the loved one has grown a little bit distant recently, not as responsive, says nothing's really wrong, but just wants a little space. And then mm-hmm. this activates, you know, somebody who carries a lot of abandonment
sure.
fear. What would that process look like then?
Yes. So great question. I would, number one, first and foremost, help that person just connect with everything that's coming up. So I want them to, you know, feel their feelings, get clear about them, and help them to identify, like you just said, what is sort of getting activated or triggered in terms of their own insecurities and their own patterns that they're bringing. So I would help that person perhaps maybe to make a list of all those, you know, insecurities and even the patterns, because, you know, when somebody starts making themselves distant, we might start grasping and pursuing and, like, you know, hounding, like, what's wrong, what's wrong, what's wrong, and trying to really help them see clearly what's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So I might have them make a list. And then with the list of, you know, those insecurities, those fears, those patterns, I might prompt them to say, okay, so how willing are you, you know, to see some of these fears differently? Are you willing to step into, you know, this being a big time for learning? Are you willing to see this as some kind of, you know, learning opportunity, an opportunity instead of a crisis? I once learned, and I don't know if this is actually true, but that the Chinese symbol for crisis was also opportunity.
Yeah, I love that.
I don't know if that is ultimately true. I read, you know, I've seen that in a few different places, but in just that shift in seeing this differently as perhaps instead of a crisis as an opportunity, there's movement in there that gets us out of feeling stuck in whatever the problem is into a place of being able to perhaps, you know, make some constructive steps in whatever that situation may be.
So sadly, I had to look this up while you're talking. So a lot of people think it's danger plus opportunity equals crisis, and one website says that that's misleading, but I will have to figure that out, because I thought the same thing, and even if it's not true, I still like it. I think to look at it like that is just beautiful.
I like it too.
Yeah
so funny.
Yeah, I like looking at it that way too, even if it isn't true. It's a nice little lesson anyway.
So why don't we distinguish and just generalize anxiety from a panic attack, because they are different.
Yeah, so generalized anxiety is when our worry is just out of control. You know, we find that we can't control our worry. It just is kind of taking on a life of its own. Panic attacks are much more short-term and really intense, where we might have, you know, there's a bunch of different symptoms that we might experience when we're having a panic attack. I would have this sort of overwhelming fear of that I was going to die, this overwhelming experience of dread. My hands would shake, my heart would race. I'd literally feel like tingling and adrenaline coursing through my body. And panic attacks happen in time. So they sort of peak and then subside within a short amount of time. But it's important that anybody listening, you know, anybody who's healthy can have a panic attack. It doesn't mean that you're actually going on to develop, you know, a mental disorder. Of course, it's something to pay attention to. But in my case, it led to fear of further panic attacks. So I would avoid triggers like exercise, anything that could trigger, you know, a panic attack. I start to avoid places because I was terrified of having more panic attacks, which is sort of the hallmark feature of panic disorder, whereas generalized anxiety disorder is more of a general, uncontrollable worry.
And when someone is having like they're in the middle of a panic attack, what do you feel like is the best thing to kind of say to them?
Well, a few times I've had to, I used to work at a college counseling center. There were a few times when I would be called to help a student who was, let's say, in a stairwell having a panic attack. Mm-hmm. And what I would have them do is, and we can do this now, you know, even just for everybody listening, as long as you're not driving.
Right.
If you place one hand on your belly and the other hand on your chest, and as you just naturally breathe, noticing what is moving more. Is your belly moving more? Is your chest moving more? Or is it about equal? In our culture, we, number one, we're told, oh, you should have a flat belly, you know, stuck in your stomach. So we start to automatically breathe from high up in our chest.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're stressed, we automatically can tense our belly and breathe from high up in our chest. And so when we're breathing from high up in our chest, we're actually not getting a deep diaphragmatic breath, not even that we're deep breathing, just like a full complete breath. We're not really getting that. We're sort of shutting off part of our breath. So if you notice that you're breathing from high up in your chest, I would prompt somebody, just soften your abdominal muscles. That's all you have to do. Don't change your breathing, but just soften your abs.
Mm-hmm.
And automatically the belly, just like a baby breathes with their whole belly or a puppy, you know, if you're watching your dog breathe, they breathe with their whole stomach, and that, in my experience, has helped folks ground a little bit from when they're in that really intense panic state into kind of coming into a more calm state to help initiate that calmness to
Deborah
return.
Looks so calm. I'm watching her across the way. She's like on a beach somewhere in Tahiti. She's so relaxed.
I was literally in a zone. That was amazing, listening to your voice and just doing that and just feeling it, because I guess I was pretty calm today because I started out with breathing more deeply into my belly than in my chest.
That's awesome.
Oh, I love it. Oh, okay, let's do that again.
You know what's funny? I was just thinking about how, you know, when someone's like upset and you're like, calm down. It's like the worst thing to say ever. Like,
yeah.
No one's ever good idea. Right? Like, I didn't think about that. Yeah. I didn't think I needed to calm. I mean, it's just so funny, but I think it's because the other person is so anxious. They don't know what to do. They're just like, you know.
And when you're in a panic attack, are you supposed to breathe into a paper bag or no?
You know, I never did that for myself, and I've never prompted anybody else to do that. I know that that's supposed to help if you are hyperventilating, but I've never actually used that, so I don't really feel like I can knowledgeably say either way. I think, honestly, this what we just did with just softening your abdominal muscles and just breathing like a puppy or a baby, it's going to automatically bring your breathing back into a normal pattern.
Okay, good to know, because I know people have said that before, and I've always been afraid to tell anybody to do that. It seems so almost anti-intuitive, like
shorter breath.
When you're already short of breath.
I love that visualization with the puppy too, because it's so funny. I was literally looking at my dog today, and they're just so calm, and the belly's up, and same with babies. I love that. There is just something so calming, even about watching that.
Yeah, and we've lost that, you know, in our culture. It's go, 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 go. There's nothing in our culture that encourages us to stop and to slow down and to pause and to be in the moment, to be in the now.
Yes.
So it really becomes a practice, a moment-to-moment practice of noticing, where's my mind? You know, am I off a week from now planning, or am I here with my feet on the floor and feeling my nice, soft puppy belly?
Right, exactly.
We are speaking with Corinne Zupko, the author of From Anxiety to Love, A Radical New Approach for Letting Go of Fear and Finding Lasting Peace. You know, you sound like somebody who should be on a TED Talk.
Yes. Have you considered that?
Oh, my goodness. That would be amazing. I would totally love to do that. I just, with the book launch and all this part, you know, this process happening, I have not yet pursued that, but that is definitely a dream. Right. I would love that.
Yeah, you'd be great at it.
Oh, thank you.
And the other question I would love to know from you is, so a lot of people feel anxiety is fear of the future and depression is being upset about the past. Would you agree with that?
That has been my experience. In both working with clients and my own experience too. So it does seem that, you know, anxiety happens because we are worried about what is to come. We're not usually worried about what happened. And depression is, I agree, you know, about the, it can be about the past, but that can also be projected into the future with beliefs like, it's never going to get better.
Right.
Things always happen bad for me, and it's just going to keep happening. Mm-hmm. So I think depression can have a future element to it. But I have sort of adopted that viewpoint because that's been my experience.
I have another little take on anxiety that I learned from my Gestalt therapy background, and that I like this one a lot. Maybe it'll be helpful. Anxiety is the gap between the present and the future, and the present and the past, two areas over which we have no control.
Oh, I like that.
Love that.
Yeah, it's so simple. Because, right, that brings us back to the present. That's how we reduce our anxiety, is coming back to what is now and what's right in front of us.
Yes, so yes, yes, yes. And what we were talking about before with the voice of love in our mind, mm-hmm. this idea of having an inner therapist, that mm-hmm. can only be accessed in the now.
Right.
It's not about figuring it out through the past or the future or what's to come. We can only tune in to that guidance, to that inner guidance in our own mind in the now. So present moment practices, mindfulness practices, even just something little, like rather than brushing your teeth and walking around your house, like straightening things up or kind of mm-hmm. half watching TV, just brush your teeth. Just stand there and feel the toothbrush bristles and taste the toothpaste. It's little practices like that, moment to moment, that orient our minds to the present, and so we can better get in touch with that voice of love within. And another way of thinking of that voice of love is our intuition. We all have intuition. And so that's another word, you know, if any of the language that I've used doesn't quite resonate, another word to consider is that our intuition, and our intuition mm-hmm. is always in the now.
I love that. I love the simplicity of the organization in your book also, where you have the mind strengthening mantras and the mm-hmm. journal prompts.
Yeah, I felt like those were really important to add, because I needed, when I was so lost in anxiety, and I had it to the point where there were periods where I couldn't function. I couldn't get off the couch. Mm-hmm. It was hard for me to eat because my stomach was in such a knot. I needed short little phrases that were like mantras that were mm-hmm. comforting to me. And so many of those mantras are, I call them mind straightening mantras. Many of those are in the book. The journal prompts, the journaling was so key for me in writing and healing, because I would just need to dump into my journal, you know, get mm-hmm. everything out, everything that was bothering me, everything that I was worried about. I really used my journal as a tool. And so there's lots of other activities throughout the book to help, and meditations as well.
And for our listeners, I absolutely love this. So here's an example of one of your mantras. There's a deep part of me that is always at peace, even though the surface part of me feels pain. I absolutely
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So beautiful.
Thank you. That really speaks to, again, that's another way of thinking of that. That voice of love is always at peace within us. It's always in that state of mm-hmm. perfect peace, and it's there. We might just not be aware of it or in touch with it at all, but it's there, and we're working to remember that.
I love it. And I always love to put everything in a positive perspective when we can. So what are the strengths of people who suffer from anxiety?
I love that question, because one of the strengths that we have as anxiety sufferers is that we have a very easy time recognizing fear. It might be the slightest twinge of fear. It might be that moment of like, oh my gosh, you know, what's going to happen? Or what was that? In my case, because I had so much health anxiety, what was that physical pain? Mm-hmm. When we have such a gift with being able to identify fear, that becomes an asset. When we start repurposing that skill of identifying fear and anxiety, when we repurpose that skill to bring what we notice to our inner therapist, to our inner guidance system, and ask mm-hmm. for the miracle instead, that now, that ability to identify fear becomes an asset in our healing. Because in this work of A Course in Miracles and in my book, like I said before about the onion and the layers peeling back, we have to be aware of what is coming up in order to bring it to the light to be healed, in order to see it differently. Mm-hmm. So that's a super important thing that we have as anxiety sufferers, that we might not stop and realize that is actually a skill that we can use for good.
That's awesome.
And who has been your inspirations? Is there any particular authors or leaders that have helped you on your journey?
Oh, what a good question. I have, number one, my mom, because she was the person who brought me to A Course in Miracles, and she still is A Course in Miracles student, so we talk about it all the time. So she's been an enormously positive influence for me. I have gained benefit from the teachings of the Dalai Lama, Thich Nhat Hanh, Jon Kabat-Zinn, so a lot of these different mindfulness teachers that have become, you know, mainstream in America, like Tara Brach. I've been very helped by them. There are other Course in Miracles teachers like Marianne Williamson and John Mundy and Nook Sanchez, these other folks who have done a lot to really bring, you know, the course into the mainstream, and have also, you know, helped me with their writing. So I definitely have a lot of favorites. I can't just pick one.
I know, it's hard. It's like, who's your favorite child?
That's so awesome that your mother was the first one.
That's
you spoke
so
of.
Sweet.
That's so beautiful. I love that when people have wonderful relationships with their
parents. I feel very blessed.
Yeah. How did she handle your anxiety? Was it a learning curve for her along the way, or was she always just a soothing person? What was that like for her?
She was. Oh, what a good question. Because, you know, I think she had a little bit. Anxiety definitely runs in my family. My dad has anxiety. My mom had it a little bit, and depression has run in my family. So we're not newbies to mental health issues. So my mom was, I think, naturally very sensitive to it, but she knew at a deep level that she couldn't fix it for me. She wanted to, and I think it's a very natural thing as a mom, you know, to want to fix the thing for your child, but she couldn't get into my head.
Right.
I had to be the one to decide at some point, I'm going to do anything, you know, I'm going to do what it takes to find peace again. I'm going to do what it takes to heal. And so I think she recognized that and then gave me space to explore different pathways. She didn't tell me I had to study the course. She didn't tell me I had to be a part of a particular religion.
Mm-hmm.
She recognized that I was going to have to find what works for me. And I think that giving me that space to do that exploration for myself was really, really important.
Well, what's so beautiful is in the beginning of the book, you're talking about the story about you in college and, you know, having this panic attack and calling your mom. And it was so interesting because I had like a visceral reaction when you were like, oh my God, I don't know what's happening to me. I'm shaking. I can't breathe. And I started to get anxious because I was imagining like my children calling me. And the way that she was able to sort of be detached almost, like it was beautiful. Like it was sort of like, okay, she was calm throughout, you know, versus me, I'd be like, oh my God, let me come save you. You know, I'll be right there. And sort of like wanting to swoop in and rescue. And it was almost like you said, like she kind of knew intuitively, I cannot solve this for you. This is something that you have to do sort of on your own, but I will be here kind of just support you throughout.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, because one of the things that, you know, when I was going through the dark depths of anxiety, most people had no idea. I put on a really, really, really great convincing smile. Mm-hmm. And the only folks who knew were really my mom, my stepdad, and then my husband, who was, you know, my boyfriend earlier. They were really the only ones that I told, because I needed people. What my mom did for me was not escalate my fear. Had my mom been like, oh my God, you know, we got to get you help. Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
That only would have freaked me out tenfold. You know, that only would have added like, oh my God, there's something wrong with me. I'm going crazy. Like I'm going to be gone. Like I'm going to totally lose my mind and never get it back again.
Yeah.
Instead, she came at it from that, like you just reflected, that calm place of like, okay, this is happening and we're going to figure it out and we're going to get through this. And I'm so grateful to her for that, because I didn't tell certain people because I knew they would have that reaction of, oh my God, you poor thing, this is terrible.
Yeah.
And that was not the kind of attention that I wanted. I didn't feel like that would help me.
Makes sense.
It's so funny. I've seen so many, like especially mother-daughter dynamics before, where the mother's like, I don't know what to do with her. She's so out of control. So I don't know why she's so anxious. And I'm looking at the mom going, why do you think she's so
exactly.
anxious?
Yeah, exactly. Like, where is it coming
response
from?
Response is very, very, very activating.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so good that your mom could recognize that and not you know, push those buttons, but actually make space for you.
Yeah, and I think that's so important, where we are so mindful of ourselves. This is where it really becomes a very individual practice. You know, we might want to get our kid meditating and being mindful, but if we're not doing it, we're not reinforcing that in them. So it becomes really important that we become aware of ourselves and our reactions in order to be able to hold a healing space and a loving space for one another.
And I am forever grateful to my daughter, who actually encouraged me to try yoga. It was she who was doing it and practicing it daily. And I was observing this change in her in terms of her level of calmness and just different energy. It was like, I want some of that. I'm going to go get some.
Yeah. I credit I credit meditation for me. That like, if I didn't have my meditation practice, I'm already crazy. I'd be 10 times more crazy.
Well, meditation and moose. You've got M&M.
Exactly.
Meditation and moose is Kelly's only vaginal birth. It's her dog. It's
he's the best. I have two kids, but I always joke because this dog was like my baby before my kids. So he's like, I call him like the pot smoking of dogs. He's like so relaxed and chill. And, you know, he just reminds you to be present because, you know, he's just there and he's the best.
Had a birthday party for him at 12 years old.
I did have a birthday party. It'll keep going for as long as he lives. But yeah, but animals are so good like that because they do. They teach us to be present. Mm-hmm. They teach us to stay calm. You know, he's not thinking in the future or in the past. He's just, you know, licking his paws and, you know, dealing with the moment. It's great.
There's a wonderful book, and the title of the book is Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. And Why do you think zebras don't get ulcers? Because they don't sit around worrying, oh my gosh, when's the next time the lion's going to show up?
Yep.
What's going to happen in a week? Do I have enough money in my retirement account? Like, they don't do. We have these lovely cerebral cortexes that enable us to think and plan, but they also get in our way when we use that ability to turn on our worry cycle at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, to worry when we should be sleeping. So I totally resonate with that we can learn a lot from animals because they're so in the present.
Yes,
for sure. Wow. For sure. I was having so much fun actually observing the giraffes at the safari park. They were so calming watching them just eating the leaves from the trees and
I love
lots of pictures. It was awesome. We are running out of time. Can you believe that?
I know, went quick.
So what do you hope most readers will take away from your book, From Anxiety to Love?
My hope is that this book will strengthen hope in people that there is another way, that we don't have to give up on ourselves, that no matter how bad things can be, if we are made of love, and I truly believe that we are, we can remember that. And so I truly believe that we can come to remember that boundless love that exists within all of us. So my hope for people who read this book is just that they will become very hopeful and trustful that healing is really possible.
And where can people find you and your website and the book and all of that?
I'm online in all of the popular places like Facebook and Instagram, and my book is available anywhere books are sold. My website is the title of the book, FromAnxietyToLove.com, and I post there as well.
Well, you are a wonderful guest. You're so calming to both of us. We both could take a nap, like just a soothing, but thank you so much. We really enjoyed having you.
So excited.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
And next week we have Donald Altman, the author of The
Mindfulness
Code.
Mindfulness
Code.
Yes.
So excited. That's right.
We'll deal with like a second part of mindfulness. It'll be like a two-parter. Great.
That's awesome. All right. Have a beautiful day, everybody. We love you.
Yes. Follow us on Instagram at Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.